Welcome to The Word at First Pres. The sermon you're about to hear is not part of a regular sermon series. It stands on its own and can be instructive to our Christian faith in its own way, even though it's not linked to other sermons. I hope you enjoy.
Our first scripture reading comes from the book of Judges with verses in the 13th chapter. There was a certain man of Zorah, of the tribe of Danites, whose name was Manoah. His wife was barren, having borne no children. And the angel of the Lord appeared to the woman and said to her, "Although you are barren, having borne no children, you shall conceive and bear a son. Now be careful not to drink wine or strong drink or to eat anything unclean, for you shall conceive and bear a son. No razor is to come on his head, for the boy shall be a Nazarite to God from birth. It is he who shall begin to deliver Israel from the hand of the Philistines." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Our second scripture reading today comes from John chapter 19, verses 25 through 30. Meanwhile, standing near the cross of Jesus were his mother and his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. And when Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing beside her, he said to his mother, "Woman, here is your son." And then he said to the disciple, "Here is your mother." And from that hour, the disciple took her into his home. After this, when Jesus knew that all was now finished, he said, in order to fulfill the scripture, "I am thirsty." A jar full of sour wine was standing there, so they put a sponge full of the wine on a branch of hyssop and held it to his mouth. When Jesus had received the wine, he said, "It is finished." Then he bowed his head and gave up his spirit. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Well, again, I want to start by saying Happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there. I think that we need to state up front that Mother's Day for many women is one of the most important celebrations of the year. I remember being at the gym one time and I saw a woman who was close to my age. She was working out and I heard her talking to her friends. And she said that aside from her birthday, Mother's Day was the most important day of the year for her. And I thought to myself, wow, I really need to up my game because I have not been putting in enough effort into this. And this year is awesome for me because Courtney's birthday is actually today. It duly aligns. She hates it, by the way, the fact that these two things are together, because she wants them to be separate. But for me, it's kill two birds with one stone day. So it's working out very well for me. Now, I also want to say that on Mother's Day, what I notice at church is that there's a lot of people here who I don't normally see. And so I want to say thank you to all the moms out there for flexing that Mother's Day muscle and forcing your family to come here to church with you. I really appreciate being the beneficiary of all of your leverage that you're using today. And so I'm sure that your family has a lot planned for you today, right? Don't you? You're going to take everybody out to lunch. It's going to be fantastic. And I can see the look on some of your faces thinking to yourself, "I thought the gift was coming to church. I didn't think I had to do anything else." Got to keep the game up. It's important. So for those of you who thought this was the gift, I promise I'll make this part as painless as possible for you. So today I want to start with one of my favorite poets. If you've been here through the years, you know that this poet is very important to me. We talk about him all the time. His name is Khalil Gibran. So Khalil Gibran, he is probably, arguably, one of the most important poets of the 20th century. He has this amazing ability to take Eastern Arabic thought and Western Christian thought and blend the ideas together into these beautiful musings on life that really are applicable to everyone. Now, his most famous work is called The Prophet. He wrote it in 1923. This is what ultimately would set him on the map, but he wasn't famous when he wrote it. He became famous when Elvis and the Beatles and Johnny Cash, when they took parts of his poetry and put them into their lyrics, and that's what made him explode into the poet who we know today. Sadly, he was dead when all of that happened, so he didn't get to experience his fame. So today, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be taking one of those poets from The Prophet. It's called On Children. And I figure it's probably appropriate for Mother's Day. If you're going to be a mother, it requires you to have a child. And so here we're going to listen to this poem, and it's going to lay the foundation for what we're going to talk about. Let's listen.
Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you. For life goes not backward nor tarries with yesterday. You are the bows from which your children as living arrows are sent forth. The archer sees the mark upon the path of the infinite, and he bends you with his might, that his arrows may go swift and far. Let your bending in the archer's hand be for gladness. For even as he loves the arrow that flies, so he loves also the bow that is stable.
All right, we will come back to that poem a little bit later on. I wanted you to see it now because we're going to go through it at a different point in the sermon. For now, I want to start off with what we heard Laura read from Judges. This is about Samson's mother. And if you don't know anything about Samson, Samson was considered to be one of the greatest warriors in Israel's history. And in the part that you hear Laura, or you heard Laura read, we see that Samson's mother is barren, meaning she cannot have children. Barrenness is a consistent theme throughout the Bible. You see it happen all over the place. And unlike today, where one could argue we have a bit of an overpopulation problem, where we have 8 billion people in the world and maybe not enough resources to go around, in the ancient world, having children was very important to your survival. Do you know the statistic? Do you know out of 10 children in the ancient world, how many of them would survive into adulthood? 2.5. Thereabouts. Almost 3. So basically, if you had 10 children, you knew that 2 or 3 of them would probably survive into adulthood. And that was if you were lucky. So the fact is that you needed these children to help you out. And not having children was a big deal. And it was different for men and women, the effects of this. So for men, if you didn't have children, or you didn't have any help. But also, you couldn't pass on your legacy, you couldn't pass on the family name, and you couldn't pass on your family wealth. For women, it was a bigger issue in the sense that your worth and your value was really bound up in having children, particularly male children. Now, unlike today, where many women choose not to have children for whatever reason, and that's totally fine. We're in a completely different world today in that way, in the sense that you can make those choices and there's no repercussions for that. In the ancient world, it was different. You carried a lot of stigma with you if you couldn't have children. And in fact, you'd be judged by the women around you for not doing what your job was seen as a wife. So you can imagine how Samson's mother would feel when all of a sudden this angel came to her and told her that she was going to be having a son. Does that sound familiar, by the way? Ever heard that story before in the Bible anywhere that you can think of? Okay, so that story, it repeats itself. So there's a little caveat, though, when she's told that she's going to be having a child. The angel tells her, look, if you're going to have this baby, you have to abide by the requirements of the Nazarite. Now, what does that mean? The Nazarite, that word means that you have been one who is separated or set apart. And there were 3 requirements you had to follow. The first is that you did not imbibe any alcohol, wine, or strong drink. The second is that you had to make sure that you didn't eat any unclean food. You had to eat kosher your whole life. And the third is that you were never allowed to cut your hair, ever. Now, of these 3, if I was looking at them, I think 3 would be the hardest. Wouldn't you guess? Like, that would be kind of rough, never cutting your hair. But actually, in the ancient world, 1 was the most challenging. And this is because, in the ancient world, all of the water that you would drink, it was usually heavy laden with bacteria. And so when you would drink it, you would get sick. Now, they didn't understand, by the way, that there was bacteria in the water. What they understood was you drink the water, it doesn't make you well. So what they would do is they would take that water and they would mix it with alcohol, even just for hydration purposes. They would mix it with alcohol because the alcohol would kill all the organisms inside of the water. So what this means is that pretty much 100% of women in the ancient world, they were drinking while they were pregnant. And if you know anything about the development of a fetus, even a little bit of alcohol can actually have a really negative effect on the development of a fetus. And there are some scholars who have suggested, and I think this is very interesting, that the reason why we've had such a massive leap in our civilization in the last 150 years is because of the development of germ theory. So the idea that now we have to purify all of our water. So all the water you drink out of the tap, it has been heavily purified. So just imagine it for a moment, right? You as a woman, now you have access to purified water. You're not drinking water that's mixed with alcohol, which means that that developing fetus, all of a sudden, now it can develop to its fullest potential. And you have not only just a few, now you have millions, billions of people, which is why we've seen such leaps in our ability to be able to move forward. So Samson's mother, who we're going to come back to now, she is basically doing what almost all women do today, which is that she's abstaining from drinking alcohol. And so when she has her son Samson, he actually is not only very strong, but he's very clever too. He's a very clever guy. Where he's not so clever is with the ladies, I'm going to be honest with you. Like, if they say love is blind, yeah, he wasn't so good with that. So a great example of this is his last lover, Delilah. So this is a painting. There's lots of paintings of Samson and Delilah. So Delilah, she got together with Samson specifically to kill him. That was her job. And so she was asking, you know, Delilah was asking him, you know, how does one subdue you, Samson? And he would lie and he'd say, oh, you just tie me up with ropes. And then later on that evening, soldiers would come in with ropes and tie him up, and he'd break out and he'd kill all the soldiers. And he never quite put two and two together that after telling Delilah what they needed to do, and then the soldiers come in and did it, he never put together, she would never do that to me. And so eventually he does tell her that the way that you get rid of his strength is by cutting his hair. And you can see that she's holding on to his hair and that she's reaching for shears to cut his hair off so that he can be subdued. Now, the reason why I love Samson's story is because the arc, the trajectory of his story, is very similar to many mothers today. So today, what I know is that when many mothers become pregnant, they become very focused on the health of their child. I know many moms, they read tons of books about what it's going to be like. They start taking vitamins. They start caring about what they eat. They start making sure they're not drinking any alcohol. And they want to make sure, because those first 9 months are really important to that child being born and having the best foundation. And then once the child is born, of course, now you have for the next 12 years or so, that child is really attached to you. And so you have to lay the best foundation. You have to make sure that that child has the best education, the child has the best resources, that you're going to do everything to make sure they have the best possible start at life by giving them all the opportunities that they need. But there is a certain point, and most of you moms in here know this, there is a certain point at which you can no longer control your children. There is a certain point at which they start making decisions for themselves. We have moved into this new and uncharted territory in my household with my sons, Lucas and Elijah. So Lucas is the younger one, Elijah is the older one. They are not allowed to do anything without our say-so. They do not have the autonomy to make their own decisions. When they want to go somewhere, they have to ask our permission always. And my oldest one, he's becoming very conscious of the boundaries that we've set around him. I think if he had his way, he would go and come whenever he pleased, never telling us where he was going to be. I think that he would spend as much time on his phone as humanly possible. He wouldn't go to school either. I think he would eat junk food for every single meal and never eat anything healthy. And so what we're seeing is that, you know, he's pushing up against the limits of the boundaries that we set for him. And so what I feel like my wife and I have become is professional negotiators. That's where we are. We are negotiating the terms of engagement every single day. So He'll ask me questions. Questions like, hey, can I go out and spend time with my friends? Absolutely you can. But you got to be back within 4 hours. Why do I have to be back in 4 hours? Well, I'd like to see you for one. I haven't seen you all day, and I'd just like to spend, you know, just 2 minutes with you. That'd be awesome. But I get to see you for 2 minutes. Sometimes that doesn't even happen. So he'll go, he'll come back, and then he'll ask for things. He'll say, hey, I would like to buy this computer, $2,000. And I sit there and I say, no, you cannot have that. And he's like, will you split it with me? And I said, no, I won't split it with you. But you can work for it if you want to. He'll ask things like, can I stay up late? Of course you can stay up late if you want to. But then, you know, he starts sneaking. I watch him come upstairs. He's sneaking the sweets and everything. And I'm like, you got to put those away. Why? Because you already had ice cream. Earlier, I watched you. I gave it to you. I watched you eat it. And then, towards the end, he'll be like, he's going to bed. And we'll talk about, you got to go brush your teeth. Why do I have to brush my teeth? Because of what you just ate. I know I'm the worst dad ever. I know. It's okay. I understand. Now, one day, my children, they will have the autonomy that they crave. And all it takes, really, is two things, age and trust. Now, age, that just comes with time. But trust, that's a bit more subjective. And really, this is where I want to come back to our poem from Khalil Gibran. Because it is within this poem that I think there's some really important wisdom that we can talk about, and what I think many of us have gone through. You've dealt with it either as children or you've dealt with it as being parents. Let's take a look. He says, your children are not your children. I love the way that starts. Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. I think many parents, when they have their children, they see their children as their property, as though they own them. And what Khalil is trying to say here is that although you have responsibility to raise your children actually do not belong to you. They belong, as he says, to life itself, which I just think is a beautiful way of putting it. If we were to translate this into Christian terms, we would say that our children belong to God. And this is why we say in the church that we are all children of God. So in a very real sense, we are surrogate parents to God's children. God has entrusted us to raise God's children for a period of time and to launch them off into the world. Now, why does this way of looking at our children matter? Why does it make a difference to look at your child this way? Well, it's because I think most parents, they desire for their children to be mirror reflections of themselves. They want their children to think like they think, to act like they act, to believe what they believe. We want our children to embody our values and our morals. But as Gibran says when he talks in the poem, he says, for you may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. Your children are not smaller versions of you. You are trying to raise them to be these independent, free-thinking individuals, which frankly is very scary. I'm not going to lie to you. That is a scary, scary thing. Very scary for me. So we have a lot of addiction issues in our family, a lot of addiction issues. I watched as my family members and my friends succumbed to their addictions. And over years, as I watch this play out, it's why I made the decision to never drink alcohol, to never touch drugs. Never done it in my entire life. Because I saw what happened to them, I saw what they went through, and I made the decision. I said to myself, it's just not worth the risk. It's not worth it to me to see what it does to me when I saw what happened to them. Because I have an addictive personality. Absolutely I do. And so I've taken the opportunity to channel that into more positive things, like exercise. But as you all know, if you were here a couple weeks ago, sometimes I can even take that to an extreme. So I worry that my sons have that same addictive gene that I have. And if I'm being totally honest with you, I kind of wish and hope that they think like I think, that they act like I act, that they believe what I believe, that they're mirror images of me. Why? Because it's much, much safer. But I understand. My boys are not me. They will make their own decisions. They will make their own choices. And ultimately, they will make their own mistakes. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm not having conversations with them. I've sat down and I've spoken to my son Elijah, and I've said to him, on different occasions, I've said, look, this is what you're growing up with. If you do this stuff, you are rolling the dice. And you just have to know that that's what you're doing. As long as you're aware of it, you make your own choices. But I realize that it is not worth my time to try to force him to think the way that I do. Indeed, it is a very illusory thing to try to make your children a carbon copy of yourself. What's interesting is that Gibran in his poem, what he says is that if you love your children, then what you're going to do is you're going to be able to enhance the best parts of who they are. And what I find to be so fascinating, this is like a little bit, this is something that I've really come to, which is a true irony of life, which is that the more you try to control your children, the more they will spin out of your control. And the more you love your child and let them be who they are, that will allow them to emulate the best parts of who you are. And this gets at a paradox that applies whether you're talking about children or not. And this is a paradox of life, and you can take this to the bank, which is that the less you try to control the world and the people around you, the more in control you are. Whereas the more you attempt to control the world and the people around you, the more you are going to be mired in chaos and discontent. Guarantee it. So if you love your child rather than trying to control them, something interesting happens. There's a role reversal that occurs in that type of situation. So I always thought that being a father, that I was going to be teaching my children everything that I know. But in truth, the fact is I do teach them. It's just that what they learn is mostly through osmosis rather than by intention. What I try to intend to teach them, they don't care about. And then what they actually do learn from me, they learn, I didn't intend to teach them that. They just kind of absorb it. And here's what ends up happening, though. Here's the role reversal when you let your child be who they are. The role reversal is that your child ends up teaching you more about life than you would ever teach them. It is absolutely true. Minus my children, I would know far less about life than I do right now. They have taught me so much. I will give you an example. So we were driving one day, this was many, many years ago, we were talking about Elijah's birth. And Courtney asked him a question. She said, where do you think you were before you were born? And he said, we are wind before we are born. I thought that was profound. I couldn't even believe, he said it right off. He goes, he didn't even think about it. He says, we are wind before we are born. I thought that was so beautiful. I, as a pastor, I've dedicated my life to studying life and death and the soul. These are the things that I care about. I've read countless books on those things. That answer was more meaningful to me than all the books I've ever read about the subject. And I think this is what he's getting at when he says, you may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you. If I had tried to make Elijah like me, a carbon copy of me, that answer would have never come out of his mouth. Because I would have never thought of that. I can tell you that right now. But he did, because I allowed him to be his own person. And I think the same thing is true when it comes to Jesus' relationship with his mother. So just think about it. Who is Mary? Is Mary some highly educated woman, affluent? Is she walking around? Is she in the aristocracy? No. This is a very poor woman, a peasant woman of no education. Imagine if she required that Jesus was going to be a carbon copy of her. What if she said to Jesus, you know what? No, you're not allowed to leave Nazareth, this little village. I need you to remain a carpenter. I need you to keep working. I need you to take care of me. You can't go out into the world because it's dangerous and it's scary and you could get hurt. But what does she do instead? She lets Jesus be who he's supposed to be. And he goes out into the world and he preaches all this wisdom to all these different people. And what ends up happening? Where does that path lead him? It leads him to his execution. Now, can you imagine as a mother standing in front of the cross watching your child be executed? Can you even imagine what that would be like? We read about that. That's what we read in John. Mary is standing there looking at her son. And can you imagine what would be going through her mind at that point? If I had just been a better mother, if I had just protected him more, maybe he wouldn't have ended up here. But yet, it's him ending up there that allowed him to change the world. So by letting him go down that path, by letting him choose his own path, he ended up changing the world. It definitely wasn't the path she would have chosen for him, I guarantee you that. But think about what he did with that. And so often, I think we as parents, we see the success or failure as our children as a reflection of who we are. Would you agree with that? So if your child is super successful, goes out into the world, oh, productive member of society. Oh, I must have done a pretty good job. I was a good parent, wasn't I? But if your child fails to thrive, if your child struggles, oh my God, all the mistakes, all the failures, all the things I did wrong, that's why my child didn't make it. But I want you to hear this. This is for all parents, but this is especially for the mothers in the crowd. I want you to understand this. You have very little control over the life of your child. In spite of your best efforts to lay the best foundation possible, which I know all of you tried to do, in spite of all of your best efforts, your children, they are their own person and they will take their own path whether you like it or not. And that is just the truth. And in fact, that's what Khalil Gibran is getting at in the poem at the very end. And this is one of my favorite parts of the poem. I'm going to read this to you again. The archer sees the mark upon the path of the infinite, and he bends you with his might that his arrows may go swift and far. Let your bending in the archer's hand be for gladness. For even as he loves the arrow that flies, so he loves also the bow that is stable. All right, now what's he talking about here? He's talking about an archer, right? Now to understand what he's talking about, you have to understand archery. I need a volunteer. All right, so to understand the way this works is you have to understand that God is the archer and that your child is the arrow. Now, the way it works is that you, as the mother, you are the one who are you're setting your child on the bow. That's your job. You're setting the child on the bow. And then God is taking and shooting you off into the world, a chaotic world. And so the question becomes, I know everybody's like, ooh. The question becomes, how did you set the arrow on the bow? And I want you to know, all you mothers here today, that I know you did the very best you could to set that arrow on the bow, for you let your children off into the world. And I want to say thank you for that. Thank you for all the effort that you gave, not just to bring us into the world, but to allowing us the opportunity to be who we are today. And I hope that you will be celebrated for that foundation that you have given to us. And I want to end this morning with the poem from Khalil Gibran on children one last time, and I hope that you will think about how not trying to force your children to be like you, allowing them to take their own path, that is a door to immense beauty in the world. And as you watch this little film that I put together, I did this during the pandemic. My children were younger at the time. And it's my way of trying to bring to life what I think is such a beautiful poem about our children and where our children go in life. Happy Mother's Day to you all. And amen.
Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you. For life goes not backward nor tarries with yesterday. You are the bows from which your children as living arrows are sent forth. The archer sees the mark upon the path of the infinite, and he bends you with his might, that his arrows may go swift and far. Let your bending in the archer's hand be for gladness. For even as he loves the arrow that flies, so he loves also the bow that is stable.
Thanks for listening. And if you want to learn more about First Presbyterian Church of Arlington Heights, please visit www.firstpresah.org for more information on service times, directions, and to learn more about the First Pres family of faith.